Coming to you direct from the nerve center of the galaxy's greatest comic. This is the 2000 AD Thrillcast.
Borak Thungathis, and welcome to the 2000 AD Thrillcast. I'm your host, Molchar. We've got a two-segment Thrillcast for you this week. First off, we're going to be talking to editor, graphic novel editor, supremo of Treasury of British Comics, Keith Richardson.
Thank you, Mike. That's the nicest thing you've ever said to me.
We're going to be chatting away about two of the releases that are coming up from the Treasury of British Comics, which are particularly special. And then we're going to be talking to Ian Edgington, the writer on Fiends of the Eastern Front 1812, about what he's got in store for one of the all-time greatest... In my opinion, I think that's universally felt. It's one of the greatest all-time 2000 AD strips, isn't it, Fiends?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, love Fiends.
Absolutely.
It's fantastic.
What his plans are for that coming up in the new year. But let's kick off by talking about Treasury of British Comics stuff, because we've got a couple of really nice books coming out for different reasons. First off, I want to talk about Elmer's teaser, because obviously... last month, we had the terrible news that Carlos Esquela has died.
Of course, yeah.
And the tributes have been incredible. It's wonderful to see just how many people's lives he touched with his incredible artwork. So it's a difficult coincidence that Elmer's Tizo is the book we're bringing out.
And quite gutting, because it was one of his favourite characters. Mm. And I was really looking forward to getting his feedback on the final book. He was excited when I told him we were bringing it out.
Yeah.
So just gutted that he never got a chance to see it, really.
Tell us a little bit about Elmer's Tizo.
Well, it was like I say, it's one of Carlos's favourite strips. It's very much in the same vein as The Man with No Name. Mm. So you have this ex-slave who's a half-breed, terrible term I know, but he's constantly called that in the book, where he's half Mexican, half black. And he's gained his freedom, and he's now a mercenary. And the story, I don't want to give away too much, but he is very much, like I say, in the vein of The Man with No Name. You know, if you look at some of the Sergio Leone movies, rather, you know, it's all about him playing off two sides against each other during the Civil War. So, you know, he's got the South and the North, and he's just up to various all... bits of naughtiness. I can't speak when it's cold, but there's loads of twists and turns. You can tell that Alan Hebden had a lot of fun writing this. You can tell that Carlos loved drawing it. In fact, Carlos kind of requested that, you know, he wanted a strip that was a little bit different, because I think he was a bit burnt out doing just straight up war stories. And of course, at this time, he'd already been drawing the Rat Pack, and he'd done some Major Easy, and it was at his request that El Matismo was born. But it's a cracking story. I just wish there was more of it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
I guess we kind of got more later on from Gordon Rennie in the magazine.
Yeah, kind of.
El Matismo type character, yes, who's kind of brought back. But it's all about what if, and I just think that, spurred on by this collection coming out, I think Carlos could have been easily persuaded to kind of come back and do some more, which makes it all the more, you know, saddening that.
It was a groundbreaking character in the 1970s.
Oh yeah, there weren't too many black characters at that time.
I mean, I think John Wagner said on Facebook that he could think of a couple of others that did precede Elmer's Tizo, but well, I want to say it was groundbreaking then. I mean, it's particularly relevant now when you have this resurgence of the use of the Confederacy flag in America. You've still got a lot of racial tension and issues in America, and to have a character like this, as you say, playing both sides off against one another.
Yeah,
I mean, that's,
and the thing is, you know, not only that,
raw.
But you know, credit to Alan Hebden. He's not like a bag of stereotypes either. He's kind of really well nuanced, haunted character. You know, you kind of forget after a while about, you know, what colour he is or where he's from.
Yeah.
It's not a major issue, and it's not exploited in any way. It's just a really great character and a brilliant story.
Mm. I mean, the whole strip, this was one of the strips that, as you say, he specifically wanted to have created for him.
Yeah.
And I remember the interview years ago, and you know, it was one of his fondest characters.
Yeah,
that he'd worked on.
100%. You can see a lot of Carlos in the character.
Mm.
You know, the little cheroots. And...
Yeah. So another book that we've got coming out just in time for Christmas, at the end of this month, is Ken Reed's Creepy Creations. Now, Faceache was a massive success for us last year. Lots of people really enjoyed it. It was a lovely hardcover collection. This is something a little bit different to that, in that this was a series of just it's not comics, it's illustrations.
There's no narrative series, just pin-ups. Yeah.
But this was one where readers were in charge of it, really, wasn't it?
Yeah. Very much so. Up to about the eighth entry, they were all from the kind of Delicious Mind of Ken, maybe some editorial staff at the time. But after that, it was readers' suggestions on different characters, and then Ken would try and translate what they'd come up with and put it on the page. And 9 out of 10 times, it was just something amazing.
Mm.
Of course, there's another few artists who are in there, like Reg Partlet, but it's almost entirely Ken.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it really showcases what an exceptional mind this guy had and what a talent he was.
Mm.
And why these kind of things haven't been collected up before in the past, I just don't get it. I really don't get it. And it's about time it was collected up. And
yeah.
We've had copies back and it looks beautiful.
Because he was a workhouse, wasn't he?
It was amazing.
The standard of stuff he was putting out over the years.
Absolutely amazing. He was a complete workhorse. I mean, he seemed to kind of eat, sleep and breathe comics.
Yeah.
Really brilliant. Mm. Really brilliant stuff. And, you know, the Creepy Creations, that kind of kick-started, you know, this kind of secondary part of Ken's career where he was kind of quite well known for doing pin-ups in comics.
Mm.
Because that was followed by later on down the line by the Worldwide Weirdies,
yeah,
of course,
yeah.
And around the time there was a bit of an overlap, but he was also doing Wanted posters, which kind of coincided with the Creepy Creations.
Yeah, what's the value of doing stuff like this? Like, as you say, it's never been collected up before, but we're doing it. I mean, why?
Why not? I mean, they're absolutely brilliant pieces of artwork.
Mm.
You know, there's no hard and fast rule about what comes out with the treasury. We haven't said we're only going to be collecting up comic strip. I just thought this would make a lovely art book, so let's create a lovely art book.
Mm.
And I think it's going to go down extremely well with people.
I mean, it's
at least
absolutely
get
90
odd sales for the people that kind of submitted these things in the first place.
Yeah. Well, yeah. If you were one of the readers of Shiver and Shake who submitted an idea, do get in touch and let us know which ones you had printed. With the Treasury of British Comics stuff, looking ahead to next year, I've seen the schedule. It's very exciting. Lots of great stuff. In terms of what we're selecting, there's so much. I mean, the archive is absolutely huge, particularly now that we've essentially bought virtually, with the exception of Eagle and one other thing, we own the IPC back catalogue. I mean, that's 130 years of comics. What's your process? What's your decision-making process in how you choose what goes on the schedule?
It's an interesting one. Well, I've familiarised myself with, I would say at this stage, maybe about 40% of that archive, and some of that's even a bit shady.
Sure.
So I'm just plucking stuff out that I think has legs or has an audience, or even from feedback from people in the industry and in general fandom.
Yeah.
If they recommend something, it's really good, then I'll do a bit of research, and if it makes sense, it makes sense.
Mm.
A lot of it's stuff that I remember, and you know it's quality, but, you know, first and foremost, it's got to be, okay, not so much in the case of Creepy Creations, but it's got to be a good story with glorious artwork.
Mm.
That is what comics is all about. It's a marriage of those two disciplines, and you do get occasional absolute belters, like we now own The Spider, for example.
Mm.
Trigon Empire is another one. The story's great. The art looks beautiful. And that's what it's all about. And case in point with El Matismo, you know, you've got Carlos at the top of his game and Alan Hebden obviously writing something that he loves, a kind of genre that he loves. So that was a no-brainer. It's such a great little self-contained story.
Is it almost like... Like there's an embarrassment of riches in that archive.
Oh, 100%.
Mm.
Yeah, it's great. Now, you know, some of the stories might, you know, they might feel a bit dated, but they're still great stories. There's just so much in there. And like I say, we haven't even gone through everything yet.
Yeah, yeah.
There's so many strips that people have been telling me about that I've just not got around to. But it is, you know, it is quite crazy. I would ask everyone to be quite patient as well, because I'm having people saying, why don't you put this out? That's what you need to get that out. Well, we own this stuff forever, I'm guessing. So it will happen. If it doesn't happen under my watch, it will happen under somebody else's watch.
And there's only so many books we can put out a month.
Exactly.
Without draining people's pocket money.
This is very true.
Yeah, yeah.
There's lots of different factors that go into, you know, what we're selecting to put out as trades. Of course, another thing to factor in is, you know, we're trying to kind of reboot certain characters and certain titles. So when you have something like The Vigilant, you know, it just makes sense to have a Leopard from Lime Street volume out, or a Steel Commando book out. So we can kind of reintroduce that world in a wider scope to the audience.
Yeah. In terms of what's coming up on the schedule, but what you would like to have come up on the schedule, is there a gem that you're just itching, even if it's not particularly commercially viable, is there a gem that you're absolutely itching to get out there?
There's a few, and as Mike kindly pointed out earlier, I am really under the cosh today. My health is not good. I'm dying of a cold, so names escape me. So please forgive me. But there's do you know what? There's some cracking strips in Sally, of all
really?
Titles.
Right.
Yeah. There's I believe it's called Janet the Justice, or it might be Justine. Sorry, Justine the Justice, which is great. It's about this young girl who follows an old hermit into a cave. And he gives her items containing lots of kind of weird powers.
Yeah.
And she, for all intents and purposes, becomes a superheroine. And that's a great looking strip. Completely out there. I've also seen a strip in one of the girls' comics that it's about a blind ballerina, but it was illustrated by Ron Smith. So it looks really like, you know, I'm a sucker for Ron's work.
Yeah.
So I just want to kind of delve into that a bit more. It's just finding the time, because there's a deluge of work on my desk already. But there's some real beautiful stuff out there. And of course, you know, we've got a spider now. I mean, we've got the bloody spider.
Yeah. What
a fantastic strip.
No, absolutely.
And I've also found out we've inherited a character called Gadget Man, who was co-created by Jerry Siegel.
Yeah, co-creator of Superman.
Yeah, so we have Superman's stepbrother in our pocket, which is fantastic. You know, I need to get to grips with that.
Oh, you mentioned rebooting stuff just then. We've already seen The Vigilant that we've done, but you're also the writer on the Sniper Elite comic that we recently put out this year, Sniper Elite Resistance. The trade's out this month.
Yes.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about it? Because you've done a bit of writing, but this is your first proper big series.
I've written a few things, a scant few strips before in a past life for a magazine called Hot North. Music magazine. I know it sounds dodgy. That was out. It was circulated in the north of England in the early 90s. But I had a comic strip in there, which I won't mention because it was terrible. But yeah, this is the first kind of long form kind of comic I've done. It was a lot of fun. I just had an idea. I know that Jason Kingsley, that is, was quite happy to have a sniper mini sniper series out there. I've edited a couple of the one-offs before, because we've had comics to sniper comics that have coincided with game releases. I just thought, you know what, I'll throw my hat into this and see if I can actually have a go at writing something, because I had an idea, and by some miraculous design they kind of liked the idea. And hopefully people have enjoyed it. But it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
Because this is being put out under the logo of Battle.
Yes.
The classic Battle Picture Weekly. Is it something, without giving too much away, that we want to expand? Actually, you know, it's a question that people have asked online. Are we bringing Battle back?
Do you know what? In a roundabout way, I think we could. Not in its old incarnation, but in other ways.
Sure.
So there's a very strong reason as to why there's a Battle logo on the cover of Sniper Elite Resistance. I would like for Carl Fairbairn, the lead protagonist, to maybe interact with other elements in in those pages of battle.
Well, of course, there's guest stars at the end of Sniper Elite Resistance.
That's
without
right.
giving too much away.
Yes, yeah, yeah. So, very, very much so. And I would like to kind of extend that into other little spin-offs. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah.
Not saying I have to write them all. I've got at least one more in my back pocket, but, you know, I don't know if I'll be given the opportunity. But if somebody else... there's plenty of people out there that are really chomping at a bit to write a battle story. It'd be great to see somebody else kind of take that one step further.
I could give you at least half a dozen names who have contacted me privately, just going, what's the deal with this?
Yeah, there you go. But even more so, though, I would love to see some of these... here's one for you. I'd love to see some of these battle characters turn up in a Sniper Elite game. That really would be something. Could you imagine, like, you know, just like...
D-Day Dawson.
Death Squad or you know, Johnny Red or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Just to turn up and keep Carl Fairburn on his toes.
Brilliant.
I mean, I think that'd be absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
But that's one to talk to the gaming guys about. I would definitely like to spin this off into more comics and build upon what we've got here.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thanks very much for giving us a little peek into what's going on with the Treasury stuff, Keith. Considering that your vocal cords are rapidly melting.
It's not good.
Under the onslaught, I'll let you go. But brilliant. Cheers.
Thrill overload.
So after the jumping on prog of 2100 a couple of months ago, one of the strips that really stood out for me and one I was very excited to see return was Fiends of the Eastern Front, which was a classic, one of the all-time classic stories of 2080 for me by Gerry Finley Day and Carlos Escala back in the 1980s. Now, this was a series that returned a number of years ago in a series for the magazine, written by David Bishop, with artwork by Colin McNeil. But we've been treated to a number of weeks of Fiends of the Eastern Front 1812, which scratches so many of my particular itches with vampires and old war and costumes and snow, funnily enough, which is one of my favourite things. And it's wonderful to welcome writer Ian Edgington back to the 2080 Thrillcast. Welcome, Ian.
Thank you, Michael. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
Good.
And waxing lyrical about the new series of Fiends. Tell us a little bit about how this came about, because, like I said, it's not a series that we've seen, apart from a couple of specials a while ago, like one-off stories. Tell us how 1812 came about.
For a start, it's such a cool concept, you know, vampires fighting during wartime and behind the scenes. And so just that core concept, I think, is what really appeals to people. It's like it just seems like a natural fit. And I just thought, well, okay, it had lain fallow for a while. And I was thinking, well, you know, what can you do with it? And I'm a big fan of the Sharp novels and the Duelists film, the Ridley Scott film especially. And I thought... That there's that one bit in the Duelist, which is the retreat from Russia during the Napoleonic Wars, where there are, you know, people are freezing to death around camp. And I thought that would be so cool to set things in the snow with vampires, and of course the Costanta was the vampire leader. They're always like fighting against the Russians in the one set in World War II, the Dave Bishop, Colin McNeil ones. I thought it just seemed like a natural fit. So I thought, okay, but what I wanted to do as well is that in both the original story, the Carla story, and the one that David Bishop did, it revolves around basically Constanta covering his tracks from you know his interference in various wars. And the question was, why is he doing that? So I kind of set up that he kind of falls afoul of Baba Yaga, who the Russian witch kind of cat. And so it's we established they've kind of got this ongoing conflict that actually spans over the years. And this is part of the reason why he's covering his tracks, is that she's got agents out there after him, and he's kind of, you know, trying to get rid of her as well. And they're all kind of like dancing around each other. So it's that's the reason he's trying to make sure he's not discovered during World War II, and so he's that he's trying to keep out of her way so he can, you know, plan her demise, kind of thing. So, but it was just setting that up, and also just basically it just looks great set in the snow and those costumes, you know. And it's just, and Dave Taylor was a revelation, because Dave, you know, he's primarily your science fiction guy. You know, you want Blade Runner-y stuff, you want that. You know, Dave, you want tech, Dave's your man. Mm. And so when I put it to him, he went, yeah, go on then. Like I said, there will be horses and costumes. And he went, yeah, okay. And he grasped that nettle, and he really, I think it was because it was such a different a field of research. It was such a sharp left turn that he got into it in a big way. And he's just an, I mean, it looks, they look like storyboards from movies, some of the scenes, that he's, the way he's plotted them out. You know, it's a two-line panel description from me just looks like this beautiful thing set in the snow, and it's just like, wow, okay, you know, he's enjoyed himself here. And it's just, you know, it was just a little side story, six parts. You know, we never really thought much of it, but the feedback that we've got has been tremendous, and it's like, wow, okay, it's kind of, there's definitely a gap in the markets for this. So.
Well, horror is something that 2000 AD has done, but not an awful lot of. You know, so, some strips have had horror elements in them, but sort of out and out horror is relatively rare. Fiends has always stood out, and it was always the perfect kind of a Escalar strip, where you've got all this atmosphere, you've got war, which is one of his favourite things to draw, but then you've also got the supernatural aspects as well. It just seems to work perfectly in a world saturated with vampire stories. It's always really stood out, isn't it?
Yeah, it has. I mean, and I kind of like, his character was kind of started off a bit of a cliche that he I mean, because he had that pencil moustache, so he was almost like a moustache twirling villain. And it's I kind of like go, okay, well, how did he get to be this? And so we kind of start to infill his backstory. And in 1812, he's still a monster, but you actually see glimmers that he's quite humane and what led him into being the way he is. And at one point, Baba Yaga said, you know, it's only in battle that he feels alive, kind of thing, now, because he's kind of like dead inside. And we roughly established that he was like a warlord kind of thing back in the Dark Ages, and he'd been betrayed and he was on his last legs and went to these witches to kind of give him enough strength to get his revenge on the people who betrayed him. But and to actually regenerate him, they actually made him into a vampire. It was like a bit of a poison chalice. And so he's a vampire kind of made by magic as opposed to being bitten. And so he's quite unique in that respect. And so we're hinting at backstories and broadening out the kind of folklore, mythological horror kind of things. You know, there's those witches, there's that Baba Yaga, there was a golem in the in David Bishop's one. So it's kind of, we're building kind of like a magical, mythical ecosystem kind of thing, but I want it to fit into almost like it's a more of a real world environment, like the, you know, the Fiends thing is, you know. So it's we're introduced to this kind of subculture, and so we're going to drip feed bits in. I mean, in the other story I'm doing with Tina as well, the Fiends of the Western Front, we see a little bit more of that. So it kind of, it's building up this nice patchwork of backstory.
And we live in an age of Hellboy being one of the most recognised comic book characters in the world, thanks to the movies. But you know, Mignola's original strips are incredible, and they kind of play in slightly the same sandbox. Have you tried to avoid that kind of thing that Mignola's done over the years, or is it just too much of the same sandbox?
It's tricky because obviously especially with Baba Yaga, you know, I've got the books on Russian mythology and things, and so you are dipping your cup in that same well, but it's you've got to sort of, it's just trying to have some kind of separation. I mean, the artwork style, the way he's done, say, like Baba Yaga and things, it's very different. So, but there are going to be crossovers because you're using the same kind of source material, but it's where, you know, we're going one way with, she's recruiting kind of like her own agents to find, you know, Dan Costanta kind of thing, and he's got his own agenda going on. So we are drawing on some of the same base references, but we're going to spin it off in a kind of different direction. So, because it's, you know, Hellboy is, you know, undeniably an influence, but it's we've got such good core material in the Fiend stuff that there's no need to kind of imitate anybody, because we've got such a great story here. Full stop. Mm.
Let's talk about themes a little bit, because you've already touched on the whole humane aspect of Constanza, despite being a horrible vampire who kills people, he's not necessarily always on the side of bad, it's one of the things I liked about the original series was actually how somewhat complex his relationship, because he was fighting on the side of the Nazis.
Yeah, because I think it was established they were Romanian, and so I was looking back, and that Russia had kind of, I think I say at one point they'd had their boot on the neck of Romania for like, you know, decades, you know, centuries kind of thing. So there was always like an animosity there. So that's why he's kind of fighting against the, you know, he'd fight with the Americans against the Russians, or he'd fight with the British against the Russians, or the Germans against the Russians. It was kind of, it was songs, it was against the Russians. So he's the reason he's fighting, he's kind of predates all of those kind of wars, really. And I think it's the last thing he's got to cling on to, you know, that represents his humanity. If he didn't have that, you know, what would he do, kind of thing. It's and so by the time we've seen the Fiend stories in World War II, he's definitely become derailed from a kind of humanity that that's still around in the stories I'm doing. And so it's kind of, I want to kind of bring some, you know, if we do some stories set after World War II, I want to bring a little bit more humanity in. And but yeah, it's the focus was mainly the because they were Romanians, and kind of they'd been occupied by the Russians in various shapes or form for years. That's why he kind of sided with whoever suited him at the time, kind of thing. So
you've already mentioned the next story that you're doing with Tina Trevelyan, which I believe starts in the Christmas issue 2111, which is out next month. Do you want to tell us, without too many spoilers, a little bit more about that?
Well, it's Fiends of the Western Front, of course, so which obviously takes place during World War One, and we've been lucky enough to be okay to use the Black Max character from the old Fleetway library.
Excellent.
You know, Von Klor and his giant king bats and stuff like that. I mean, and who could not love giant bats and a triple wing biplane? And so it just, you know, I thought, okay, Fiends of the Western Front seems like a natch, and then it's just like, who would you have in it? And it's just like, okay, again, it just seems such a natural fit. And again, it's only a little 8-part story. We kind of, these like toe in the water things, but hopefully, you know, more can. I want to try and, I said to Dave and said to Tina, and I want to try and like build a little world here that we can kind of, you know, little bits of story start to accrete to it. So it's like, you know, like it's a pearl growing kind of thing. And so we have Tim Wilson, who's the Allied pilot from the original stories, and he's with Constanta, and there's all to do with Von Klor and the King Bats, and Von Klor is one of the last of the Bat people, and we find out about them and the relationship to vampires and stuff, and it's just great pulpy soap stuff.
Yeah.
And it's just a hoot to write, and it is kind of like thigh slapping panto in many respects. It's kind of, because it's you can do it dark and serious, but also there's an element to it. I mean, I've got the Black Max collection, and it's great because at one point Von Klor has a greenhouse with a giant octopus in it, you know, on the front, and then the giant ants, and you just go, okay, right. It's like, because if people go, oh, you're being a bit frivolous with this, and it's that's a bit. I go, look, the guy had a bloody octopus in the first series, so. You know, I think, you know, we can do what we want. So it's been on Tien, and again, like Dave has just kind of gone, oh, okay, this is cool, and grasped the nettle and just kind of run with it. And some of his stuff is great. We want to talk to Tharg about doing the Constanta origin story that's going to be kind of, it's kind of, I don't know, call it like grindhouse gothic. It's like lots of blood and armor,
right,
and things like that. You know, it's Kingdom of Heaven with a lot of Kensington gore. I don't remember, that's what they called the blood in Excalibur. They used to have buckets and buckets of this in the John Borman movie Excalibur. They used to have buckets and buckets of fake blood, and they used to call it Kensington gore. And so we'll find out his kind of origin in that, if we were kind of given the thumbs up, which I'm hoping we will. So
and I Tiernan's artwork is a bit of a different to Dave Taylor's stuff on 1812. Are we going to see any more from Dave?
Yeah, I mean, hopefully Dave's doing another like a long job for Rebellion that's going to occupy him in the future, but again, it all depends on how generous Tharg is. If I can actually get stuff done and bank the stories while Dave's doing that, so he can jump onto it afterwards, that would work for me. I mean, one of the other ones I want to do, which is tentatively, is Fiends of the Eastern Front 1963, which is the Cold War, you know, with the Russians and the Americans, and you know, it's all very Bridge of Spies and Ipcrest File and things like that. And I just thought, you know, I just imagine cold, bitter, windswept East and West Berlin, you know, just perfect for like vampires and stuff. And I thought, yeah. So that's another one I've got to kind of got to run by Tharg, but that's the next step that will, and it will follow the threads of the stories that will follow through. At the end of Fiends 1812, we established the French soldier has become like an agent of Baba Yaga, and he's still alive in present day. And so, you know, we'll maybe see him in 1963 kind of thing in pursuit of Constanta. So it's all, we're building up a nice little kind of soap opera, getting our players in there kind of thing.
I mean, you're with two millennia of recorded conflicts, you know, you're kind of spoilt for choice with European wars that you could, you know, the 30 Years' War, the Great North War, the 80 Years' War, just so many of them.
There is, and it's kind of, war is a great back, you know, cover for a vampire to do his stuff kind of thing as well. So it's great to, you know, set something against those backgrounds. I want to try and, you know, look into some lot more obscure conflicts as well that people don't really know about, which will have like a nice twist to them. But yeah, I was a little trepidatious about thinking of the 1963 one, because I thought, well, technically there's not a thing, but I thought, no, the atmosphere for that is just right. But yeah, the 30 Years' War would be an actual, you know, a really good showcase for that. That's something I've got to add to the list.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the series you've been working on, because you've got a lot of balls still up in the air, as it were. Yes. with strips like Helium, Brass Sun. We've got new Scarlet Traces coming next year. Is it a case of you kind of beavering away as quickly as possible to get these out, or do new ideas pop into your head and kind of go, ooh, I'll go and do this? You know, where are we in play with some of these other series that I know people are looking forward to seeing, and more Stickleback as well?
Yeah, it's kind of a little from column A and a little from column B. We're doing more Scarlet Traces, and then Matt and I are going to leap on to do another series of Stickleback, which will make enough for, I think, a collection. And it's been left on a cliffhanger for far too long, so we kind of want to get that sorted out. We'd love to do more Helium, definitely. Again, it's it all depends on Matt. I've got him locked inside his hamster wheel. So I need to clone him, basically. And there is more Brass Sun, because the whole story for Brass Sun is kind of going to be split over three collections. And so it's like a following Ren's kind of life story in a way. So I've just been talking to Ian, and he's going to fit it in around the stuff he's doing on Brink. So that there's going to be more on that coming. It's just plate spinning, and then new ideas pop in. And just I wanted to do the Fiends thing, and then when I kind of mentioned trepidatiously to Matt about using the Black Max, and when he said okay, kind of that kind of opened the floodgates. Like, wow, okay, then
the gloves are off.
Yeah, and your mind starts reeling, and the annoying thing is you start thinking of other stories. You know, I've got to do the Scarlet Tracy story now, but I've got an idea for a Black Max story, and it won't go away. And it's just like, oh, for goodness sake. I'm quite fortunate. I've got all these like plates spinning and getting the done. And this year's been a bit of a crappy year, because my dad, who's 83, had a triple bypass. Wow. I know, and it's just like, and typical for me, he used to run his own little haulage business, sounded like a little van thing. Toughed out a heart attack on the side of the road, didn't tell anybody, so of course he damaged his heart. But luckily he doesn't drink or smoke, so he had operations, he's fine. But he was in a lot of pain at one point, and people were going, oh, we don't know. And it turned out, being my dad, that it was wind. he got when they stitched him back up, they trapped air inside, and so basically they had to deflate him. Then my wife Jane's dad, he unfortunately passed away as well. So this year has been pretty much of a roller coaster. So getting actually back to work has been nice, because it's nice to concentrate on something that isn't the real world. I'm very fortunate with the things I've got to do. You know, and I hope people don't go, oh, not him again. and I keep on the odd dread idea keeps popping up as well. So it's there's that as well. So it's good fun, and I'm living on the high hog, really, because, you know, to do this stuff, especially to do, you know, the Fiend stuff, which I read when I was younger, and Black Max stuff, it's you know, I'm lucky. I realise how fortunate I am, so I'm kind of relishing it.
Because we're rapidly approaching your 20th anniversary of starting work for Tharg, really, because it was the early 2000s when you first approached us.
That was scary. That's 2008, I think, I don't know if you know the backstory, saved my house.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it again.
Yeah, it was. I was working for a company in the States, and they wanted people to go actually and work. They got a bullpen, like an office set up, so you had to go and work over there. And they crashed and burned horrendously, owed me a lot of them, about 11 grand, I think. And it was like, oh crap, what do I do? And so, because I'd signed a contract where I couldn't take on any other kind of work, so I got in touch with Matt Tharg and just said, look, I've got this. And he went, yep, we'll take that. And Alan Barnes at the time, who's the editor of the magazine, reprinted Scarlet Traces, God bless him, and that did us a lot of good. And I kind of like took a letter and the contracts to the bank and just said, look, I've got this much of my work coming in and this is how much I'm going to be getting, please don't take my house away. And they went, no, that's fine, you know. And she's like, wow, okay. And it was cut, so, you know, whose credit to 2018 was saving my house.
Excellent.
Yeah, so it was just a weird time, but to be honest, it's what's great is that 2018 will take ideas that, you know, you could pitch to Image or say IDW something, but they'd only want to do is like a mini series where, you know, the idea has got legs and longevity. And it's like, you know, like, I mean, Red Seas ran to nearly 1,000 pages of artwork, I think, something ridiculous like that. But, you know, it just goes to show, you know, that's always been its strength, it's diversity and willing to accept stuff. You know, sometimes it's missing the target, sometimes it's right on target, but it's always, you know, the door's always open, so long as, you know, it's good enough and interesting enough. That's the main thing, you know. So there you go.
So one piece of artwork that I have seen come into the office, which I'm very much looking forward to everybody else seeing, is a big old wraparound cover for Kingmaker that you do with Lee Gallagher. Now, it's been a little while since we've seen the debut of that series, but we've got more coming up.
Yep, definitely. We're picking up and running with it. And I mean, Lee's stuff is just amazing. I'll kind of write something, you know, a short scene, and he'll just deliver the goods. At the back of the recent episode, I did a full page splash of this, the baddies coming towards our guy, and he just went, oh, you know, you bastard. But you know, he enjoys it because it's just such a laugh to write, and it's just, you know, it's like aliens invade Middle Earth, and you tell people and they go, yeah, okay, got it, kind of thing. So what we're doing, we're kind of running through some of the scenes that are in the Lord of the Rings movies, but we're kind of like putting nice twists on them, and so people think they're expecting one thing and it turns around. And also there's the serious thread running through it of, like, you know, how are they going to save the world, and, you know, we've got the orc as the good guy, and, you know, some of the bad guys were heroes before, and it's just a nice kind of twist on it, and it's just a romp. As they say, and Lee's just turning some great stuff. Just like, wow, and we go, what do you think of these? Well, here's the pencils. Just go, wow, okay. It's just a hoot to do. I mean, it's going to be like a finite series. I can see, I know where it's going to kind of end. There's room for it to go on if we wanted to, but it's there's definitely an end point, kind of like this one storyline. So we can just, you know, see how we go from there. I'm kind of, after Red Seas, I'm quite conscious of, like, you know, I don't want to keep on drawing a story out. You know, I want to build it towards a natural conclusion if that's the case. So I've kind of always got more ideas to throw. And of course, I've been working with Iron Maiden, which has been a hoot.
I beg your pardon?
I've been working with Iron Maiden. Did you not know that?
I did not know that. Please explain all.
Yeah, I did a series. It's out as a trade now, and there's another series coming up. Yeah, it's based on their Legacy of the Beast online game, the free one. And they said, let's have a go at doing it as a comic. We went, oh, okay then. And it's it got done, and it's sold out horrendously. You know, multiple covers all sold out, and the trades and things and so on. And it's just like, wow, okay. I think we actually even beat a Batman number one, you know, in the charts somewhere, which is like, okay, that's cool. And that's all down to Maiden fans. God bless them. They're lovely.
Just out of curiosity, how... I mean, I'm not suggesting that you're not rock and roll, but, you know, you like a nice cup of tea and a sit down and a biscuit.
I used to be a rock and roll. I used to be in my 20s. I had hair down to my David Cassidy hair down to my shoulders, leather jacket and stuff. And I saw Alice Cooper front row at Birmingham Odeon. Went to the first Castle Donington, all that stuff. I know.
Well, I mean, those aren't bad credentials, really.
Nah. I saw Moshead, I think, at Wolverhampton. So yeah, which that was quite interesting because it was at Wolverhampton, but it was actually in some cattle sheds. It was clearly where they did the selling like the sheep and stuff and things. Because that's why everybody was going in. The security guards were going meh. So I think I was supported by Rose Tattoo and with Angry Anderson in the lead. He got really pissed off because basically on the balcony where all the players, the celebs and stuff could look down, there was Noddy Holder, there was Slade, and everybody's going, oh, Noddy, Noddy. And Angry Anderson, true to his name, was going, don't fucking look at them, look at me. And of course, that endeared him to the audience no end.
My question stands, even with these credentials, how did you end up coming to be working on that?
It was... I got asked.
Ooh, okay.
I was working for a little kind of packaging company doing some Evil Dead comics and things. I did the one with Ash versus Hitler and Ash meets Grampus, both classics of their kind. And this just came across. I went, oh, okay. And to be honest, I didn't really think much of it because it was just like a package. But as time went on, I kind of got the little, oh, this could be rather big, you know. And lo and behold, it was. It was. I had to go down and sign the issue one at FP, and they said, you need to come down a couple of hours before. And I went, a couple of hours? For sure. And I went down, and there were like 8 long boxes full of number one, multiple covers. And it's just like, holy crap. Okay. And they went, these are all pre-sold. These are all going to the store. And it's like, oh, my goodness. And so, yeah, and there was a limited 666 run, as ever there is. And yeah, it was. I mean, it was the main bugbear. I was thinking, Eddie doesn't speak, or he speaks. How the hell are you going to get it? I was like, how do I do this? And he's got a compatriot, this thing called the clairvoyant. This kind of, and so I just went, okay, it's Han and Chewie. And so she responds to his growls, do you speak with your mother? You know, do you kiss your mother with that mouth, kind of thing? And so you get in the one side of the conversation, which of course made it, put in lots of humour and things. So it was great. It was at one point I got some notes on script going, it's too vertigo. You know, we wanted basically like 1980s image. And it's like, right, okay, I know where you're coming from now. And the artist Kevin West, funnily enough, he and I worked, and with Dan Abnett, we worked on some stuff for Malibu, when Malibu had been bought by Marvel back in the day. And we did a new series called Foxfire, which was, that was horrible. It was a company driven thing. But Kevin worked on that, and he got that great dynamic style. And so to be jumping back on, and he was just great. He really got the flair for it. And now it's done really well. So another one in the pipeline.
So you're basically jumping around from kind of fantasy sci-fi kind of that covers an awful lot of what you're doing for us. Kind of vampire, historical, and Iron Maiden comics.
Metal. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And I've got some ideas when I fling at Image or Boom and things and so on. I want to, but it's just with having kids and stuff, your work day is seriously kind of curtailed. So I kind of don't want to take on too much. So, with the 2080s, so when one series finishes, the other one will pick up. And because I've done that thing in the past where I've got so many plates spinning and, you pull all-nighters and things. And I'm a man of my age, I can't do it no more.
Well, thanks so much to Ian and to Keith for chatting about what's coming up in the Galaxy's Greatest Comic and from the Treasury of British Comics. The big thing that's coming up in the next few weeks is, of course, the bumper end-of-year issue from 2000 AD. Prog 2111 is out on the 12th of December in print and digital. And what an incredible lineup. A 100-page Christmas spectacular featuring Judge Dredd, more Skip Trade, Tracer, Durham Red, Slain, The Fall of Dead World comes back. We've got Brink High Society. We've got Fiends of the Eastern Front. And you may have seen the news about Cabalistics Inc. If you remember this strip, it was last in the prog about 10 years ago. Gordon Rennie and Don Reardon have reunited to do a one-off special episode which binds all the threads together from that incredible series, rounds it off in time for a new collection which is out in February next year, which will be the complete Cabalistics Inc. Very much looking forward to that. Great to have the original creators on board to round out the story. And also, in the past, if you have bought the digital complete collection from 2080's webshop or apps on the day of release, your digital file will be automatically upgraded to include the new concluding story. So make sure you pop that in your diary so that you can pre-order when it comes up. Prog 2111, like I said, is out in December. What a way to round off the year. We've got more from the Galaxy's Greatest podcast. Next week, we're going to be talking to Henry Flint, the artist currently on Judge Dredd's Small House. And if you've not been reading Judge Dredd's Small House, you really need to pick it up, Earthlitz. It's been an incredible ride from Henry and Rob Williams. Looking forward to hearing what Henry has to say. Until next time, stay Zarjazz, Splendid Verthrig.
Power levels dangerously high. Alert! Alert! Read 2000 AD every week. Ask your comic book store or newsagent now. Subscribe to the Galaxy's Greatest Comic at 2000adonline.com. Subscribe digitally on our apps for Apple, Android, and Windows 10. And download DRM free copies from 2000adonline.com. Alert! Alert! Stand by for urgent updates. Search for 2000 AD on Twitter and Facebook. Watch the latest videos at youtube.com/2000ADonline and follow on Instagram at Insta2000AD. Program complete. Shutting down.